On this edition of Josh Nason's Punch Out, Jack Encarnacio returns, talking about breaking a window of the Pontiac Silverdome in order to get inside, UFC on ESPN Plus, AEW, and a bunch of other stuff as well. JNPO starts right about now. Hey everyone, Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch Out fame, back with you, WrestlingObserver.com. It's a place to be, seen. And let's see, what do we got going on? UFC on ESPN Plus coming up in just a matter of days. I want to talk about that and a bunch of other stuff as well. So I hadn't talked to my old buddy Jack Encarnacio in quite a long time, about a year since we did the podcasting thing. He and I have talked between then, but he hasn't been on the show, so I wanted to have him on to talk all about that. Let's see, what do we talk about? Let me go to my list of stuff. We talked about AEW. We talked about wrestling, AEW, and just kind of like what his thoughts are on all that. We talked about kind of what he's up to with the Laps Fan and Between Rounds Radio. We talked about the end of the Fox era with UFC. And kind of just, you know, some memories of that and things, failed experiments, some successes and so on. So we chat about that. Then we transition to talking about the UFC's debut on ESPN Plus. Not exactly like a full preview. We really just talk about kind of the business ramifications of it and kind of what we expect and a lot of that. So this is if you're into kind of like the, I don't know, you're not going to get like a fight by fight preview or anything like that. We did talk a little bit about the card at the end. But, you know, if you're into this, the business stuff, you're going to like this show. And we close the show with a story I'm still laughing about. We just got finished recording like 5 minutes ago. Sorry about how he and his Laps Fan co-chairman, JP, broke into the Pontiac Silverdome to root around and experience everything that the WrestleMania 3 competitors would have experienced. And it closes the show. It's a fun story and one I was not aware of, so I was glad he told it. So without further ado, let's get to it. This is a hour and 20-minute conversation, so enjoy it. It's really good. I swear, it's awesome. Jack Encarnacio, back on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Let's hit it. Our guest at this time, he was the guest on my very first show here. He will be the guest someday when I do my last show. I will guarantee you that right now. I don't know when that'll be.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. It's a little foreshadowing for decades in the future, but hopefully you're not booked. Jack Encarnacio is back, the one and only, the Laps Fan. Formerly Sure Dog Rewind, now at Between Rounds. You can find that at patreon.com/Between Rounds. Essentially, all the Sure Dog gang that you know and love from Sure Dog Radio are there. You can find them on Twitter, as I just found out, at MMA Rewind Jack. He does not tweet frequently, but when he does, the world feels it.
Yeah, Jack. I'm gonna have to change that now that Undertaker's tweeting. That was always my North Star. You know, Undertaker makes all the money, does hardly any of the work, and has no Twitter. And Brock does no tweeting and has all the money and does so little of the work. That must be the way to play it. But now that Taker is bit the bullet, you know, you can only be in Michelle McCool's Instagram so often until you basically have to take the reins.
Yeah. The Roman Reigns, as it were.
Yes. These are my thoughts.
Yeah. The it's a very strange trend. This Undertaker being a normal person and wearing every Roots of Fight shirt possible. And, you know, out in the snow and, you know, with his, we learned that his daughter, or whatever, wants to essentially wrestle every single night and does entrances and all that stuff. There's a, you know, as a fellow dad, there's a certain charm to that, but also it's like, you know, I don't really want to think of the Undertaker as a dad, you know?
Maybe he felt like this is the only choice he had if he wanted to be able to stop Vince from making him wear his fucking costume to an NBA game, standing in the luxury box next to LeBron with his Raiden hat on and his ankle-length leather jacket. Like, this is, you know, like this is a comic book convention, you know.
Well, perhaps we'll, you know, perhaps we'll see him on Ellen this year. I should have made that my one of my big predictions for the year ahead.
Remember, he would do the talk shows in like 97 and stuff. He was still the dead man. He did Off the Record. I remember he did a couple of, you know, he talked about taping his fists for the, you know, when Austin, when Michaels wasn't going to job to Austin at WrestleMania 14, he was the, you know, he told that story himself, and he would do like straight up interviews. The Kuwaiti show where Vader attacked the guy. Undertaker was sitting there on the panel with him talking straight, you know. And then all of a sudden, he's got to protect the gimmick, and he can't be at the Hall of Fame. It's like, what about 15 years ago? He was all over the place.
Did he ever do – he did Regis and Kathy Lee back in the day, right?
Oh, did he? Wouldn't surprise me.
I think he might have. So it's, I feel like it's one of those clips where I saw him walk out. Of course, Regis does the whole, you know, sell job and all that stuff. But, yeah, that was back before the, you know, kind of the Ted DiBiase era Undertaker, for those who remember that. Mm-hmm. So it's been about a year since we did this. You and I have talked, obviously, between then, but let the people know, how are things going? What, obviously, we talked about Laps Fan, still going strong, hours and hours on end of content. You have helped out so many people get through their work days around the world and doing some stuff between rounds. Give people, you know, tell what's going on and what you're doing.
Well, we're balls deep right now into a definitive audio documentary, essentially, about World Class. We're calling it The Lamentable Tragedy of World Class, and we're passing judgment. We're passing judgment on who's to blame for the absolute wreckage that was left behind. And we're taking the idea of triumph and tragedy. You know, there is no triumph. The only triumph of that story is the prelude to the tragedy. It's what makes it that much more tragic that there were things that resembled triumph in the Von Erich story. And we're going through it year by year. We're sparing no detail. We're leaving no stone unturned. We're having a lot of fun, too, and joking around. If you don't share our sense of humor, I'm sorry about that. You can go fuck yourself. And we'll continue to create basically the only thing you'll need to hear when it comes to this story. And it's been fascinating. We're at 1986 right now, having just talked about when Fritz stepped for the cameras, when his son Mike had just narrowly escaped death. And with his hands on the shoulders of real doctors who probably couldn't disagree with him more in their heart of hearts, telling the cameras that Michael will be back and be a champion one day, when in reality, his fever had reached 107 degrees. Some of his vital organs were compromised and shutting down. And it was in an open question if he'd even be able to carry on a conversation, let alone compete in the ring as a wrestler again. Miraculously, he did. We all know what happened to Mike from there. So it's all there if you're curious about, you know, really one of the most macabre stories ever in the wrestling business, and one that still has, I would argue, ramifications today. That's what we're up to over there. And Between Rounds is a great service that TJ DeSantis, who ran the Sherdog Radio Network for years, of course, is the voice of Invicta Fighting Championships on Fight Pass, is continuing to do after moving on from Sherdog and that site changing. He kept a lot of the old you know, the kind of the original OG MMA radio, even before really podcasts was a thing. We're talking about embedded Windows Media Player streams, you know.
Nice.
Appointment viewing, or appointment listening, I should say. That was the only way you could really get it, even before really MP3 players were that popularized as far as downloadable podcasts. But, keeping you on top of the MMA world with all kinds of different looks. They do a similar Lapsed Fan thing called Collapsed MMA, where Jordan Breen and TJ go into the Fight Pass archives and, you know, lay bare all the details in and around key MMA events from history. So highly recommend it. I drop in and do some content whenever I can. Occasionally I'll do a UFC preview or something like that. Did an interview with Javier Vasquez, caught up with him back on the old Rewind show. He actually retired, announced his retirement on my show after doing a long, involved, and at times emotional conversation about his career. And we revisited him after he's battled cancer, gone through a divorce, and had all kinds of life changes. That's up there. We did a spotlight feature on Felicia Spencer and Pam Sorensen before their Invicta title fight at 145 a few weeks ago now. That was pretty cool getting to know those two ladies. So that's what's up. That's what's going on. Glad to be back here, though. WrestlingObserver.com is where it all starts. It's the nerve center of the industry. And as much sport as people try to make out of acting like that's not the case on Twitter, they know the truth.
They certainly do. And I will say that you know, we're talking on a Wednesday night. The Observer is being written as we speak, mm-hmm. and it will power the aggregating the wrestling aggregate industry in just a matter of probably about yep. 6 to 8 hours or so. It's quite something.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's still in the same position it was when it was just a print product. You know, before Dave put them online, it's still the conversation setter. And you know, there's industries apparently around going back to his old stuff. You know,
there is,
and making content in and around that, even if the content is just that was wrong, that was wrong, that was wrong.
Yep, yep, very
God
true.
God bless him.
God bless somebody. God bless somebody.
And I didn't sneeze.
No. I'm constantly amazed at, you know, you were talking about just thinking about SureDog Radio and between rounds, and talk about the lapse fan and everything. Like, it is I'm constantly amazed at just how much content there is for mm-hmm. basically any subject that anyone wants to dive deep on, no matter what it is. Like, you can yep. like yep. It's incredible. And the you know, the barrier to entry is fairly low, and you're just able to do it and build it up. And I mean, just the experience of the lapse fan itself, I mean, it's going to be like pretty amazing that, you know, you've been doing this for a few years now, and you started out just as a regular good old free podcast. And then you've built this thing up, and you're able to do these different things. And it's pretty amazing. I'm still amazed by it, even though we live in this era. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It took off beyond my expectations. People really were hungry for that perspective and that kind of revisiting of the past. You know, I mean, we plant our flag. We say it used to be better. You know, the wrestling business used to be better, and we take the slings and arrows that come with that perspective. Doesn't mean now is bad. It just means that the framework of what wrestling used to be led to more engaging viewing experience, made you care more. They took it seriously. You took it seriously. And now it's the opposite. You know, it seems like oftentimes the wrestlers think it's real and the fans think it's fake. It used to be the opposite. And, you know, there's a lot of what we've been doing, I think, from the beginning, going show by show and just, you know, lampooning it. And, you know, if you're going to, like I always say, if you're going to do a 7-hour podcast about wrestling, it better be mostly jokes, because otherwise you're living a pretty sad existence. Right. Because you have to be a wrestling fan of that caliber, to that extreme, you have to have a degree of self-loathing. You know, you have to hate yourself for giving over so much of your
yeah.
heart and mind to something that's so manipulative and so often revels in the chance to disappoint you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we acknowledge that. We acknowledge that we're self-flagellating and that we support an industry that has left a body count that, had it been any other sport in America, would have been the subject of widespread scrutiny, regulation, and overhaul generations ago now, decades ago. And so, yeah, we just go back and put our finger on exactly what about the way wrestlers performed, the way wrestling was framed and structured, and the way wrestling was received and viewed that was just superior, that just led to a better experience, that explained why people can't let it go, because they remember a time when it was so engrossing and they want it back so badly, because it can be so special when it's done correctly and when it's on the same wavelength as the fan. And we just, you know, constantly are checking boxes and learning lessons about like what's missing now that accounts for why people feel the way they do, and why when we say it's called the lapsed fan, people immediately kind of get what we're talking about when we say that, because, you know, there's more of those than there are actual fans, I would argue, right now in the soup.
I would agree. So in looking at the lapsed fan Twitter account, the lapsed fan, very easy to find if you're not following it already.
Yeah.
I see a picture here of you guys at StarCast. I forgot that you guys did StarCast. You were all
yeah.
in. What was that experience like?
Yeah, there's something that I should have mentioned in terms of what's happened since we last talked. That was incredible. It really was great to be invited out there. Conrad Thompson was saying when I was talking to him that, you know, the way he was looking at it was like, I just don't want to deal with people blowing me up saying, even if it's six people, if they blow me up 100 times each, it's still more than I want to deal with. Where's the lapse fan? Why aren't you inviting the lapse fan? Is the lapse fan going to be there? Because those are the kind of fans we have, for better or for worse, mostly better, almost always better. And he said, all right, let's just invite them, you know, because other folks that are involved with the StarCast logistics are really big fans of the show. I got to meet all of them going out there, and they're all awesome people, and they know the truth, and they know good podcasting when they hear it. So we came out there and we did a show. We did a bit of a stage show where we kind of lampooned Vince and kind of interviewed Vince about his life. And I don't need to go. Suffice to say, if you bought it on Fight TV, you can see the whole package. And we put audio of that performance on our SoundCloud, which is where our entire archive sits. And of course, you can find through our Twitter on the link. But it was so great. It was great to see all the wrestlers and all the fans and people that listen to the show in the flesh and have that little captive audience at the very end. We were the last thing on the docket all weekend. It was Sunday afternoon at like 2:30 that we went on stage. And right outside of the tent, we were doing our show, and Cody was having his cigar party with SoCal Uncensored, celebrating the victory. And then we're inside, you know, putting words in Vince's mouth about how Cody is basically a secret agent that has been sent to essentially, you know, make sure that Vince has his tentacles in this this indie thing that's happening, and how they're all eventually going to go to NXT and be taught how to really work.
What a life.
What's that?
I said, what a life.
I know. It's pretty amazing that somebody would actually pay our airfare to go do something like that. We took full advantage. I mean, like I said, going in, my co-host JP and I, it's like awkward silence is the goal. You know, like we don't want cheers. We don't want laughs. We don't want pats on the back. We don't want scorn. We just want people to feel uncomfortable and unsure about how they're supposed to react.
That sounds like most of my first dates.
Yeah, maybe it's reflecting some kind of insecurity or trauma I've undergone, but I don't give a fuck what it says. I just care that it electrifies me when people don't know how to react. So we'll do more of that. Maybe it's the Andy Kaufman fan in me.
That could be too. Actually, we'll segue. I was going to ask you this later, but since we're talking about the sport of kings, what do you make of everything going on with All Elite Wrestling? This thing has obviously gathered a lot of interest from our audience, obviously, because they hate WWE for the most part. And, you know, they like some of the people in there, but it's just, you know, this is scratching the itch of our audience. And I know that you've been obviously checking this out and kind of following along with it. What do you make of what you've seen and heard and experienced so far with it?
It seems cool. I don't know how to think about it until I know what their television is. And I don't just mean what channel it is. I mean, what day, what time? They trademarked Tuesday Night Dynamite, right?
Yeah, Tuesday Night something. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Dynamite. It's Tuesday Dynamite.
Yeah.
So, all right. So is it going to be a weekly show on Tuesday nights? Like, until that's decided, I don't know what we're talking about here. Because if it's just going to be like two more all-ins this year, that's awesome. But it doesn't feel to me like something that's going to transform the industry and bring back the Monday Night Wars. I need a day, a time, and a channel. And then I'll know how to feel about it. Until then, it's really cool that Jericho signed. I think that's really great. And I loved thinking about like how hard people in Stamford had to act like it didn't bother them that Jericho went with them. That's my favorite. Of all the emotions a human being can express, my favorite is no selling something that really bothers you. And I'm sure Jericho pulled that off. And, you know, if you read his books and stuff and listen really closely, he never really felt like WWE, while they did give him a lot of leeway, at the end of the day, they never really saw in him the money that he is. You know, they just didn't. They defined him down consistently and had him under Triple H's thumb pretty much his entire run. He had that breakout with the Shawn program and the suit going like Nick Bockwinkel heel, which was just great. I mean, it's just incredible work that he did in that run. But that was like 2 years out of a run where, you know, you're going to come back and work like sixth from the top at WrestleMania year after year when you could actually be the centerpiece face driving the ship of something that transforms the whole industry. Like Chris Jericho is a Hall of Famer. But that wasn't 100% clear, at least to me, until he went to New Japan. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this guy, if the chains were off, can draw like the old-time wrestlers we used to – like the old-time measuring stick we used to use to gauge a Hall of Famer. And he was able to prove that by going into a different context where, you know, he really could just come off the top of his head with what he thought his character should say and how his character should react. And it's just money. He's a guy that understands the wavelength of the fan so that he can throw twists and turns their way because he knows where their head is going to go before they do. And that's missing now. I think a lot of guys come up now without really understanding the fan and more understanding how to get likes on social media, how to tan, how to do like CrossFit workouts and shit like that. But they don't understand like what the fan wants out of a wrestling match and what the fan wants out of a wrestling promo. And they're told that that doesn't matter, that we tell them what they want out of a wrestling match and a wrestling promo, which inevitably fails 85% of the time. So I think Jericho is a real throwback in that regard and has only been able to truly prove that because he has stepped out of the auspices of the WWE. So that's nice to see, and I'm sure he's relishing it big time, while at the same time forcing everyone to act like, you know, they're still friendly and on good terms because they don't want to sell the fact that they're pissed that he left. And I think, I think this Tony Khan thing is interesting. I wonder what his and his father's tolerance level is for losses, for investment, upfront investment before, you know, you start to turn a profit. I remember Bob Carter and Dixie Carter, you know, at a certain point. I mean, you can go 14 years on daddy's money. And not to say Tony Khan doesn't have his own money. He certainly does. But my point is, you know, there's always a daddy. And sometimes the daddy could be a woman. I'm not trying to genderize that unnecessarily. But the point is, you know, there's someone that can pull the plug. There's always a boss. Everyone has a boss. And I think that the people that are going to pass themselves off as the boss of this new operation might not be what it appears in terms of who actually at the end of the day can say, ah, this experiment's over or it's not. So I hope to learn more about that, the fault lines of that, as the TV deal comes into play and we realize how much money is in play here and how much they're being paid. Wouldn't surprise me if DAZN factors in somehow, considering how desperate they are to just give people truckloads of money.
Yeah.
With, you know, no, and we'll talk about ESPN Plus, I'm sure, in a moment, with no discernible way to make it back. Just this like broad, vague play of like, this is where television's going. This is where live broadcasts of sports are going. So we need to take our losses now, like we're Amazon in 1997, so that we're at the front of the queue when nobody has cable anymore, which is a day everyone has been saying is going to come any year now. And it's a slow trickle. We're talking like 20 years at this rate, but it could accelerate. If it's a streaming deal, I mean, it's a totally different, I have a totally different sense of what this thing can do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of what this actually is. But if it's prime time on a top 10 or 15 or 20 rated cable station with substantial money being invested by the TV station, not just the owners of AEW, into making it a success, the production values are high and it's weekly, then we're talking about something that really can transform the business as opposed to just transform the lives of the wrestlers, which is important and which you love to see, but which has been happening for the past 3-4 years. That would just be a continuation of that phenomenon more so than something that upends the power structure of the business.
Yeah, I wonder, my big thing this whole time in thinking through this, and I'm glad that they're doing it. I think that the, you know, they could have taken the easy road and gone to WWE and signed big money deals or gone back to Ring of Honor, does exactly what they have been doing, but they want to do something different. I wonder how they're actually, like, at this point, what else in pro wrestling could be transformed, right? I mean, how can it be so different where it's going to all of a sudden turn heads? Is it going to be able to revive lapsed fans? Is it going to be able to, you know, I wonder about that, like, what is going to make it an alternative? And I think perhaps it could be, you know, it could be a byproduct of quote unquote taking care of the talent more, becoming a destination and perhaps being a, you know, a different spot for free agents to go or, you know, people to look at. But still, I mean, you know, as well as I do, I mean, there's like, even with like UFC and Bellator, there's some people that just see UFC as the end all be all. There's some people just see WWE as the end all be all because of the opportunities that it provides and also how the outside world views pro wrestling. Most people view WWE as like, that's it. They don't watch New Japan. They probably never even heard of it. And now they have this other promotion. I just wonder how it's going to be different. And also, you know, there's Ring of Honor, there's New Japan, there's all this stuff. So there's more wrestling than ever to watch. And I just wonder at some point how much is too much and what's going to make it different enough for people to be like, this is my wrestling of choice. This is either going to get me to watch this in addition to everything else, which is going to have, but also how do we get new people to actually be like, this is the only thing I watch?
Well, let me ask you this. Did All In feel like something different?
It did. Yeah, it did. I guess it did, just, but I also understood the backstory behind it, you know? And I wonder.
I mean, the show be separate from the backstory, the show that happened that night in the Cedar Center. Was that different to you, or was that just like another example of what you can get in many places these days?
I guess it felt a little bit different in that the, you know, it was just kind of like a one-off show, and the matches seemed, you know, there was obviously some wild action in the main event and some other stuff, but I mean, it was still wrestling, but it's obviously it's stuff that you can see in different forms, a lot of other places, I guess, to me.
Cause that's what AEW is going to be. It's going to be All In every week. And now I don't mean every match is going to be, you know, it's going to be an attempt, a mad dash towards five stars, but it's going to be those style, that mix.
Yeah.
You know, what we saw in the Battle Royal with that like overly creative. I love the Battle Royal. I'm not hating on it, but you know, I mean, it was like, there's probably like a 30-page script for that goddamn thing. And then you've got, you know, the Okada Classic, you know, spaced out over 30 minutes. You've got incredible state-of-the-art high-flying that, you know, you would never see in WWE. You know, 205 Live, you'll see it in like, you know, 10-second spurts and glimpses, but not like the steady diet of the flyers they can bring in. These Chinese guys, I'm going to be interested in seeing kind of how much they can feel like, you know, Dragon Gate was in Ring of Honor, or even the Cruiserweights were in WCW in terms of like a differentiated look on the show and a differentiated style. You'll have, you know, shooters, you'll have guys that do submission style. And that's going to be part of it. Like, that's going to have to be what's different. I mean, I don't see them fundamentally reimagining wrestling. I think we have already seen what the Young Bucks and Cody think is the alternative product. And we're just going to get more of that. The ideas that you see batted around like rankings and win-loss records and stuff like that. You know, I'm sorry, but that's old school. That's not innovative. And I love it. I'm a supporter of it. But it goes back to some of the fundamentals that made people care about wrestling for 70 years that, you know, Cody is not afraid to run towards. But, you know, what I want to learn more about, Josh, is it Cody and the Young Bucks calling the creative shots? You know, are they just going to be performers with kind of like PR roles in terms of being public faces? Mm-hmm. And when will the money men actually book the promotion? Because, you know, they're not in terms of, you know, financial stakes. You know, this is their money isn't on the line here in terms of, you know, they're contracted talent. They're contracted management. They're sort of like employees at will in that regard. They don't have the real ownership of this enterprise that I think a lot of people thought. I think people thought that they're entrepreneurs and that they're going to be, you know, third owners of All Elite Wrestling each. And that, you know,
that's what I thought.
Yeah. Whatever the profits are, they're going to split. No, this is Tony Khan seeing the success of All In, being a lifelong fan and saying, I'll put all the money on the table and you guys lead me and us to, you know, the next big disruption in the wrestling business. And they're talent in that game. You know, they're not owners in that game. They'll take ownership of whether it succeeds or fails, but it's not quite the same. So we'll see. It's cool. It's cool that there's all these things to talk about. And that for the first time in a long time, the imagination of the wrestling fan can run wild. It's not just like, oh, we know what's coming. We know what this is going to look like.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to enjoy it or not, but it's no one can act like they're surprised, you know?
So we'll flip to UFC, because obviously UFC making their debut on the sports network, ESPN, ESPN Plus, the digital streaming service that is going to get its, I wouldn't say its first big bump, because obviously they have soccer. I'm not a big soccer fan, but they have, you know, NHL stuff, soccer, and, you know, they've had a bunch of stuff on there. But now for the fight fans, or at least the UFC fans, are going to get their first dose of this, and we're going to see the buying power, essentially, of, you know, how many people actually subscribe for this thing that haven't already, the ease of use, and, you know, how do people flip back and forth? That's going to be a challenge. We'll get to that in a second, but I want to put one last nail in the Fox coffin, if I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ask you what your, I'll give you a couple of my final memories of Fox. It officially is officially over, but really officially ends, you know, this week, so to speak. So the things I remember about the Fox era were, you know, I think it was a good move for them overall. You know, obviously to get off Spike TV, I think it was a progression in perception. It ushered in the content era, really, of just show after show after show, and just, you know, this glut of shows with main eventers that, you know, 5 years ago there'd be no chance that you'd see some of these main events, and they just became commonplace now. Injury replacements galore, you know, scraping cards together, all these different types of things, new signs of fighters, what have you. And then as far as like for a tactic, I'll always remember the Fox era for the failed Demetrius Johnson experiment. And when I say that, I mean their idea to essentially put him on Fox main events routinely to try to get him to have some sort of carryover effect to pay-per-view, which just never worked. But I think, you know, I would say that overall, I think it was worth it for them to move. I know there's a lot of people, you know, talk about spike ratings and so on and so forth. But those are three things that I think, when I think back on it, that stick out to me the most as far as just the experience. What about you?
Yeah. I think the Fox era, overall, it did not live up to its potential in terms of creating pay-per-view stars. I feel like the pay-per-view stars that were created in the past 7 years would have been created without Fox. Mm-hmm. And that's shocking because they were on primetime network television 4 times a year, a position that they could never have dreamed they would be in even a decade ago. Well, at this point, 15 years ago, in terms of, like, you know, the Spike deal felt so massive, and that's 11 o'clock on a Monday night with occasional primetime specials on weekdays in some cases and weekends in others. But to be on Fox and to have all of the synergies that seem to present themselves around promoting fights on NFL broadcasts and using the Fox Sports, you know, coverage network, which underwent a lot of challenges in their time there, to push UFC fighters on even keel with the presentation style of the other major athletes seemed to hold so much promise. It just seemed like, and then you had the Cain Jr. fight, which did, you know, I think cumulatively like 7-8 million people looked in on that fight. And it's like, you know, this is a whole new dimension higher of potential exposure to get these guys, you know, familiar, to get these guys familiar to Joe Public. And really, like Connor, with the exception of the Dennis Seaver fight in Boston, which was on Fox Sports 1 on Martin Luther King weekend that year, he didn't even use the Fox platform to become, you know, hands down the biggest draw in the history of the business.
Yeah.
You know, he did it exactly as they could have done if they were still on Spike. And that shocked me that there wasn't like 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 cases of people who were brought along on Fox, exposed to the nation that way, even if it's, you know, a steep decline from that first record rating in November 2011 down to about 5.5 million for the Rashad Phil Davis, Chael Sonnen, and Michael Bisping second Fox show in January 2012, and then just kind of sliding from there. But still, I mean, that's still a level of exposure the UFC really ought to have been able to have leveraged more effectively. And really, to your point, it just became, you know, a content farm, you know, in a world where television producers, television programmers are convinced that the only thing that can still sell under the traditional advertising model is appointment viewing sports. As long as it's live, it's DVR proof to a greater degree than anything we could put in the can, particularly like, you know, scripted dramas and stuff that costs a lot to produce, but people will DVR and skip the commercials like 90% of the time. Sports, live sports, is like the last bastion of the economics we remember working. And so even if you're only going to do 700,000 viewers, if we can sell ads against it and tell those advertisers that the kind of viewer that's going to be watching this is going to be watching it as it happens, and therefore at least potentially impressionable by your advertising, then there's greater value there, even if it's a smaller audience than shows that do massive audiences and nobody watches the commercials. And so UFC became a great new vessel for that kind of, to feed that need. And that's precisely what they are for ESPN, just instead of trying to drive and revive the traditional television economics. They're trying to be the Trojan horse for a push into over-the-top servicing and going around the cable providers, the telecom providers, to whom they have to, you know, wrangle subscription fees out of per subscriber. And then they always go to the mat of negotiations, and, you know, the cable systems don't want to pay more and ESPN needs them to pay more. And it just goes on and on, you know, a world where they can go direct to their consumer. You pay ESPN, you get ESPN through a stream on your set top box, on your over the top box. Yeah. So now UFC is the pawn in that game. It's not like WWE and that, you know, they were the front end of pay-per-view. They were on the vanguard of pay-per-view. It's like they need industries like this, UFC, WWE, like these fringe sports, they need to be on the cutting edge, because otherwise they're just complete afterthoughts. There's no value proposition there if they're trying to play the exact same game as Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL. They need to be that guinea pig you can use to test market things. And that's what the UFC finds itself being here for, an ESPN Plus service that, you know, presumably they see as a key part of their future. I mean, they're sinking so much money into it with so little possible return. I mean, you talk about a $5 a month subscription fee, which is what they're charging. I'm sure that'll bump to $6, $7 over the next, you know, 5 years or so. Still, I mean, that's like, what, $25 million? I mean, right now they're at 1.5 million subscribers or so, maybe 1.8 by the end of the year. And that, even if that grows to like, you know, 5 million people paying $7 a month, I mean, that's just, that's a drop in the bucket when they're paying UFC $150 million a year for content on ESPN Plus, $300 million total for ESPN included. Now, I know a lot of the programming that's going on ESPN Plus isn't just being paid for by ESPN subscription money. It's also being paid for by, you know, the main network and the main subscriber-based income that they get, so that the costs are somewhat shared there. But there's no profit I can see on the horizon for ESPN Plus. You know, paying UFC $150 million a year and charging $5 a month for 1 million subscribers, you know, or 2 million subscribers, it's so far away from paying for itself that it's a pretty remarkable position that UFC finds itself in.
Yeah. With the other thing too, with the subscribers, is they didn't reveal how many of those people were from like ESPN Insider. And there was like all these things that basically combined the services. And granted, I don't think there was a million Insider people, but you know, I am really curious. And obviously they won't release numbers unless it was something, you know, huge, but I'm curious that how much this – I'm curious how many people will actually subscribe this week if that haven't already.
Yep.
If it's going to be a assumption that they're going to be able to get it just like pay-per-view, it's going to be very, you know, very simple for them to do, you know, whether basically how the adoption level will be, right? And you know how people are with trying to figure out apps and things like that, especially streaming on TV. For the most part, it's pretty easy if you know what you're doing, but especially with something like Plus – you know, it could be a little bit more difficult. So I just wonder if a lot of people are going to be like, I don't know how to do this right now. I'm just going to hold off. And I think that education level is going to be important. But this is a good test to see how many of those UFC fans and MMA fans are going to be able to carry over to the platform. You know, I mean, $5 a month is a bargain. Granted, they weren't paying anything before. But, I mean, it's not a huge investment. I just wonder if that's enough. And you know, I mean, having done you know, research and all this stuff, you know that sometimes you can give away things for free, but the minute you charge even a dollar, all of a sudden your adoption rate goes down, just because that, for some reason, just paying for something, even if it's just a small amount, throws people off. So I'm fascinated to see how this plays out this week and obviously in the, you know, the months ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with it because, I mean, it's hard for me to see them doing more than, I don't know, 500,000.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like a couple hundred thousand.
We'll
see. But again, we're talking just about the States, because obviously, you know, TSN, they're covered, or Canada, they're covered TSN and other spots. But I mean, I can't just see. I think it's just going to be a slow march to try to get where they're looking to get to.
Yeah, and my point is, I don't even know what a realistic expectation is. Like, I don't think there's any chance that they're going to get more people to subscribe to ESPN Plus to watch UFC than watched UFC for free on Fox Sports 1. And that average is like 500,000 to 700,000. And I think it's a dimension below that, because you're still going to get big time fight cards on free ESPN. The Cain Velasquez Francis Ngannou fight in February in Phoenix is not going to be on ESPN Plus. I think the prelims will be. The main card will be on ESPN. So it's not even a thing where they're going all in, which is to UFC's benefit. I mean, they would, their goose would be cooked if their only platform for building new stars this year were these streaming shows.
Right.
You're not going to be able to make an impression on people who aren't already watching if it takes the amount of, the amount of actual buy-in it takes to find it on a streaming service. I mean, you already have to be a fan. You're not gonna stumble upon a streaming service by chance like you do a TV channel flipping through, or just looking through your guide or whatever it might be. So, you know, that's not what they're facing. But for ESPN, I think it's got to be hard to look at the numbers UFC has done on traditional television and even pay per view and kind of convert those. I mean, I think Fight Pass, isn't it around like 250,000-300,000 subscribers or something?
Something like that, yeah.
They're always loath to disclose the number, but somehow or other it came out recently in some articles, and I didn't commit the number to memory, but I mean, that's got to be your expectation if you're ESPN. And you think about 300,000 people paying $5, it's like, that's just like not going to cut it. I mean, they are going to put a lot more on that on ESPN Plus. Major League Soccer and some of the other properties that they already have arrangements with, and who knows how hard they'll go, you know, in terms of forcing people to move to that platform. That's always the big trump card, you know. If you want to watch SportsCenter so many days a week, you got to get ESPN Plus. Do they have the guts to do that? I doubt it, but, you know, there are pawns in this game. There are hands that they could play to really see how far they could take this thing, the equivalent to Vince putting WrestleMania on WWE Network, you know, yeah, every pay-per-view, yeah, on. Can you go that hard? So it's tough. I mean, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what's going to be perceived as a success or a failure, because I don't really know what ESPN's strategy is in terms of how this eventually starts to make money, because right now there's so many sunk costs for the next 3-4 years, and this is only a 5-year deal. You know, the Fox deal is a 7-year deal, and 5 years, while it seems like a long time when you're sitting here, it really is a relatively short deal, yeah, in terms of, like, all of a sudden, you know, 3 years in, you're talking about renewal. Like, that's nothing, you know? So ESPN may be out of the game before we know it, you know? They might just be using this to test the waters, and who knows what kind of numbers they want to see before they determine if they're in it for a longer haul than that. But that's what's going to be happening, you know, is show by show results come in, that those expectation sets are going to start being formed in Bristol and Connecticut, and they'll make a decision from there. But it's going to be hard to get transparency and kind of get in their heads around that.
Yeah. My expectation with the shows is that they're probably going to follow suit with, you know, what they try to do on FS1 is that they'll, yeah, obviously there'll be some good ones, but I think that they will, you know, again, if you're, especially if the subscribers aren't there and it just doesn't, you know, the thing with all this too, and everyone knows this, is they are still putting on essentially monthly pay-per-views. So it's going to be this constant battle like they've had, and this is going to be to a much different extent because they have another pay service. Like, where do you put the people, right? And obviously if you're looking at, say, like, I was thinking about this, like Amanda Nunes. If you have a chance to put her on ESPN versus putting her on pay-per-view, you know, I almost think you have to put her on ESPN linear if the opportunity presents itself. And that may screw themselves out of a pay-per-view main event. But, you know, if you have a chance to maybe expose her to more people, just happen to be, you know, flipping by, there might be a chance with it. That's the thing, is with ESPN, they have the potential with ESPN linear to have so many more eyeballs on it on a big platform, but how are they going to be able to weigh all these things? And it's I'm fascinated to see how this plays out, because this is big stakes. And to your point, 5 years is not a lot, you know. And you said 3 years, you know, you're looking at, we're already talking about what's the next deal going to be, and who knows? I mean, think of just how much things have changed in the past year. You know, can you imagine 3 years ago? I mean, this, we weren't even thinking really this way, and now now here we are. This is a I'm really fascinated to see how this turns out. I mean, obviously, there's no way to predict how it will turn out, but this is interesting stuff, man. This is crazy.
Your point on Nunes is a good one, and it's something that brings me back to the conversation point about what we expected from Fox and what didn't happen, is this idea that fighters that had potential to be breakout stars but weren't established enough yet to move pay-per-view units could defend their championships on Fox and then get people to come over and buy them on pay-per-view if they performed up to a certain level. Now, it did not work for Demetrius Johnson, though I think a little bit of that is kind of colored by the it's misremembered. Like, the John Dodson fight did really good ratings, the Demetrius Johnson-John Dodson fight. He just needed an opponent that could create a dynamic fight. And then they got into this position where after WMEIMG bought them, today known as Endeavor, it became like this thing where the pay-per-views had – they just had to keep churning out these pay-per-views. The schedule was, like, so intense, and it was like they had the talent – you know, so much of the talent was hurt or retiring or cycling off that they just started to tell themselves that as long as a title is on the line, even if we have to create another interim title or introduce a new division, as long as a title is on the line, it feels like we're giving people a pay-per-view that's worth buying. Now, we're not going to expect 500,000, a million buys for those shows, but if a title isn't on the line, apparently the UFC is very afraid of putting on pay-per-views where titles aren't on the line. And that's why we get a situation where these champions are on pay-per-view before they can sell on pay-per-view, as opposed to being on free platforms that might actually give them a chance of doing that. I remember Ben Henderson was another thing. It's like Ben Henderson's you know, the Nate Diaz fight, the Josh Thompson fight. I think even the Gil Melendez fight was on Fox. And it's like, okay, we're going to build this guy into somebody that millions of people are going to see, and then we'll see if he sells on pay-per-view. And if he doesn't, oh well. But that's the strategy here. But what ended up happening was the you created tiers of fighters for a few years there, where you had your Fox fighters and you had your pay-per-view fighters. And that really wasn't the idea, or at least the promise that I detected. Remember that very first show, that January 2012 show after the Cain Jr. fight, which was kind of an abbreviated one-fight show, they had these two number one contenders fights. They had Rashad versus Phil Davis, and they had Chael Sonnen versus Michael Bisping. Chael won, went on, did big money in his title shot against Anderson, and Rashad won, went on and did big money in his title shot against Jones. I'm like, that's it. You know, you put people on the free platform who are just about to break out, and I don't mean break out towards getting a belt, even if they already have a belt. I mean break out in terms of name recognition and people actually thinking when they fight it's a big enough deal it's worth paying for. And then all of a sudden they weren't doing that anymore. They're just And Nate Diaz was really the only other guy that leveraged that platform in a way where he became a bona fide pay-per-view draw by what he did on Fox. You know, the post-fight promo after he beat up Michael Johnson, calling out Connor, the way he beat up on Jim Miller on Fox. You know, that was all very additive to him. But, yeah, I think, you know, they ought to think of ESPN that way as a way to showcase fighters that should be pay-per-view draws based on their position in their respective division but aren't. And ESPN being a great way, if SportsCenter around the horn and everybody else knows that they're pushing a show that's actually going to boost the ESPN numbers at the end of the week, everyone shares in the interest of promoting that thing to crazy and digging deep to find points of these guys and gals' personalities that can resonate. I've been pretty encouraged, actually. I want to talk about this. What we're seeing this week, Josh, is kind of like the first glimpse of how ESPN is going to treat a fight week, right? When they have stakes. When they have skin in the game. We've seen how they've treated other fight weeks where it's just a big sports story and they have to cover it, even if they don't have any rights to the actual broadcast. Now they do. And it's been fascinating to see Ariel Helwani going to these different shows and talking about points of controversy and friction. And the last thing Dana White would want discussion points around a show to be like Greg Hardy's past, like the fact that, you know, Henry Cejudo's flying the flag for a division that the UFC basically wants to get rid of for reasons that aren't really in keeping with, you know, sports and the way sports should be thought about. Yeah. And you got these guys, you know, on the other side of the desk is Ariel's holding court being like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So it's like all of a sudden a selling point for the UFC now is the controversies that we've known as things they want to push into the corner and keep their narrative in the front. But all of a sudden, I mean, if it keeps up at this in this way, fight night after fight night after fight night, you know, pretty soon people are going to be sold on fight shows based on the controversies as much as they are on the prescribed UFC narratives. I think that's an interesting twist. I think that's something Fox never did. Fox always whitewashed the controversies. They covered them, but at the end of the day, they were about like, you know, what the talking points were around a fight, like what the Countdown show said about a fight. I mean, that's what Karen Bryant would ask about, you know. But here you have UFC being like, hell, if it's something people are worked up about, even if it makes the UFC not look great, we're going to cover it and talk about it. It's wherever the energy is. So that's going to be interesting, because UFC is going to lose a lot of the narrative control that they're used to having if it keeps up like this.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, what are your hopes for this deal? I think for me, my hope is that the pacing gets better, and I don't think they'll, you know, some people have thought that maybe, you know, they have more control over ESPN than we think. But I think that still, especially when you come to linear shows, the ESPN has a network to run, and they're not going to be like, just, you can't run like 8 hour shows and just delay. I think there'll be maybe a little bit of that, but my hope is the pacing gets better.
Yeah.
I think that based on what I've seen this week, I don't watch a ton of ESPN, but what I have stumbled upon, both watching basketball games or just watching, you know, catch a few minutes of SportsCenter, they're pushing it. You know, that you see, even they're not necessarily talking about ESPN or UFC at the moment, you'll see something come up on the scroller. You'll see a static box at the bottom, just kind of reminding. So they're invested in it. I think just having that name associated with ESPN brand, I think will help them, you know, expose them to a the sports fan, and perhaps get them, entice them to check them out when they can actually, you know, flip through and watch. And also, yeah, how they tried to build names of interest and I think the promotion, the thing about building stars and promotion, I think is so overplayed, because I think it's done by a lot of people who don't understand what they're actually asking UFC to do. And I think it's like when I heard about it today, you know, people talking about, you know, they really need to promote Amanda Nunes, or they need to, back in the day, it was always, you know, they need to promote Demetrius Johnson. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just say, here this person is, and you go watch them, it's not as simple as that. And it's not with some of these stars, it's not like they, before with ESPN, they could say, we want to bring Demetrius Johnson by and have him do a 7-minute segment talking about his history in this, you know, fight on here. It's just like, well, nobody really knows who he is. It's probably, I mean, how many fighters do we honestly see on that set that made a difference? I mean, Brock, when he was on there making his announcement, that was big. You know, they've had some fighters come in. I think Tyron Woodley did a few, and we've seen a couple. But as far as like to actually make people give a shit, there hasn't been a lot. So I think when people talk about promoting, you know, I was listening to a Bill Simmons podcast recently, and he was talking about the guy that wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid that just passed away recently. William something might have been his name. I can't remember. He's a famous Hollywood writer. And he was talking about these conversations he had, and he's like, look, the people are trying to push these Hollywood, you know, this guy's the next big Hollywood star. This is a Hollywood star. He's like, look, people know a Hollywood star when they see it, and that's why they're stars. They need no promotion. They just are. And I think it's the same thing with fighting, same thing wrestling. Like, people just know the stars. So when people talk about promoting, it's not just putting them on ESPN. It's that there's a little bit of that, but it's just there's a certain thing that draws. So I'm super interested to see how this, you know, how they play this out, how they strategically look at this. And look, they're owned by an agency, right? An agency that is responsible for doing this. So if anyone can do it, it's supposed to be them. So how this plays out is I'm very fascinated by it, especially in this year one.
Yeah, me too, because, you know, as many professional sports franchises as ESPN is in bed with, they're not building stars through those relationships. That's not what they're doing. I mean, yeah, they're giving a bit more coverage to in-house properties and companies they share in the action with, and the sports leagues they share in the action with and don't, but they still have to have a pretty even spread. I mean, people watch SportsCenter for full on coverage. You can play a little bit of games here and there emphasizing one sport over another, but really, you know, you can't be bald faced about it. So they're not promoters, you know, they really are a news organization, and a broadcasting company. And in that vein, they're just going to, you know, just go towards what they think people care about. They're not going to see it as their job to make people care about something they don't care about. They're just going to come to the table and say, tell me what this is about. What matters here? You know, what you tell me. I don't think they're going to be in the business of creating, you know what I mean, the talking points for UFC. I think we saw that awkward fit when they did the WWE guys coming on SportsCenter. Remember that?
I certainly remember that. Yep.
You know, It's like WWE thinks of a world in which like everything is promotion. You know, everything is if the camera is on, it's a chance to sell something.
Yeah, and it's exhausting. As a fan, it's exhausting. Yeah.
Oh yeah, because they think they're mad scientists about it, and they just end up like tying themselves up in knots and getting nothing across half the time. But you know, the ESPN doesn't care. I mean, they're just like covering it because people care about it. So it's up to UFC to get people to care. It's not up to ESPN to get people to care. They want people to care, but they're not going to manufacture reasons for people to care. And they're not going to be sitting down trying to find star qualities in people. I think the onus is on the fighters more so than ever to figure out what it is about them that might connect with people and what might not. And just emphasize that. Most fighters figure it out. You know, I'm not asking these fighters to be pro wrestlers, but after a few years, you can tell the difference between a fight you had where people really gave a shit and a fight you had where it felt like you were out there doing nothing to silence and crickets. And it's just, you know, yeah, you collected your paycheck, but you didn't feel any energy. You didn't feel any reciprocation from the people in terms of like, you know, them being interested in what you're going to say and do next. And, you know, guys figured that out eventually. Like, say what you will about Colby Covington, you know, and how he kind of has like just a little less of that ability than he thinks he does. Mm-hmm. But goddamn, I mean, think about where he was, you know, 5 years ago. I mean, think about, you know, the Chael who fought Babalu versus the Chael who figured it out. It turns out he was just a maven and a wordsmith with the microphone. But, you know, these guys figure out if I do this, people talk about me. And people create a set of associations about me that makes them invested in seeing what's going to happen to me. And if I do this, like I used to do it, it didn't really care. I mean, you know, they didn't really care if I won or lost, really. I mean, they would watch my fight if it was part of a show they were watching, but I didn't bring emotional investment to the table. So I think for Amanda Nunes, it's like she had such a great moment after knocking out Cyborg, and she really poured her heart out afterwards. You know, she allowed herself to loosen up in a lot of ways. And there might be something there that there might not be. But I think that's the point. ESPN is going to be the barometer of whether there's something there or not. They're not going to obsess over making something that isn't there. But they're going to be a nice test case of like, you know, look, we equally promoted all these cards. You know, of course, the big fights we promoted harder, or we devoted more coverage to, I should say. But you know, this worked and this didn't. Like, don't come bitching to me if people don't care about you. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line. It's up to you to figure out what inside of you as a fighter connects with people, and do more of that and adjust your personality accordingly. Don't be boring.
I agree. And we'll round the bend with this without doing a, you know, full fight by fight preview of the show. You were in the building as I was back in the day, TD Garden, FS1 kickoff. We had Chael versus Shogun. We had what else was on that show? We had
Travis Brown and Alistair.
That's right. That was a hell of a fight. That was a fun fight. That was they did a good job from I want to say from top to bottom every single fight.
Great show.
But it was a really great show, and they just did it. They did an awesome job with it. They know how to kick off network relationships for the most part. And the show here, it's an interesting one. There's a lot of names up and down the card. The how they've structured it is fascinating because obviously they're going to flip between plus, linear, back to plus. And we have I forgot until before we just jumped on the phone that Cowboy Cerrone is fighting on the show. I completely forgot about that. Against Alexander Hernandez. We have obviously Paige VanZant against Rachel Ostovich, and obviously there's been a lot talked about her in the months leading up to this. Greg Hardy, of course, you know, lightweight prospect Greg Gillespie is up on the show, and then of course the you know, the flyweight title fight. We expect it to be for the flyweight title anyway, assuming Dillashaw makes weight and all that good stuff. But yeah, there seems to be a little bit of something for everyone here, and they've they really have done a good job with this first show.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's not too much. They're not trying too hard, but they didn't rest on their laurels either. I think, you know, you got to remember that Donald Cerrone fight with Alexander Hernandez, who's somebody that really could have some upside here. Hernandez, if he beats Cerrone, I think we're talking about a guy that's in title contention and spotlighted in the next year or two. They're putting that on ESPN, big ESPN, the main station. They're pushing ESPN Plus fights on ESPN itself. So, you know, you're flipping around on Saturday and you see Donald Cerrone fighting. Like, the go-home message after that is sign up for ESPN Plus. I mean, that's as powerful as you could hope for, mm-hmm. is, in terms of ESPN's assets. You know, that's a real vote of them trying to make this thing work. And putting the Donald Cerrone fight on the prelims for that purpose is also a big indication that they really want to see how far they can push the signups on that first day. The Cejudo Dillashaw fight, you know, is great. It was kind of haphazardly put together and kind of haphazardly scheduled based on, you know, the promotional imperative here. I mean, it wasn't necessarily an ideal fight for Brooklyn, but you know, it's got enough threads to it. And these two came through. And I mentioned Ariel doing the car wash, so to speak, this week. He also did a New Year's Eve show on ESPN2.
Yep.
And one of the features on that was Dillashaw and Cejudo on a split screen, you know, on their phones, Skyping in, whatever they were using, FaceTime, whatever it was, and just going at each other. And I'll be damned if they didn't get their personalities across. Dillashaw is an exact example of what I mean, of a guy who figured out what it is about himself that moves people. You know, the difference between a fight he had where people gave a shit and in a fight he had where people didn't give a shit, doing more of what made people give a shit. And they're going back and forth. Cejudo has this like Kurt Angle thing going where like the fact that he's a gold medalist is starting to be annoying. It could be a heel thing for him, the way he's carrying himself now that he's got the belt. So he's got charisma for sure. I always thought he was a breakout star potentially. I mean, the bilingual, the gold medal, the backstory, the boxing
hair.
Background.
The hair.
Right. The high level, the decently high level boxing background, in addition to the, you know, being one of the great American wrestlers ever, on the Olympic mats, just great. And so he's a great story for an ESPN in terms of the sports part of what that stands for. And you know, a lot of credibility there. So I think it's a great fight and I look forward to seeing it play out. It's going to be tough to envision a future beyond it. Curiously, they got Benavidez and Ortiz in at flyweight, also on the main card, which, you know, is the traditional UFC tactic is when you've got a big title fight, you put the next contender fight underneath it and hope to, you know, whet the appetite for people who tune in for the title fight to see the next contender. It's exactly what Derek Lewis did against Alexander Volkov. Last time, you know, it's like you put him on that card and sure enough, you put him on the McGregor card and sure enough, it's an acceptable main event to have Derek Lewis challenge for the heavyweight belt, not only because he won the way he did, but he won on the show that he won on with the biggest pay-per-view audience in UFC history looking in and having such a scintillating performance. So really, you know, if Benavidez or Ortiz look tremendous in that fight, there's going to be big-time talking points. Whoever wins the main event is going to get those questions at the post-fight press conference about fighting the winner. At a time when the UFC clearly has designs on unwinding the division and is talking around that. I mean, basically, this is an example of what I said earlier, where they just feel like if there's title stakes, it's an acceptable main event. That's the line they've drawn in their own heads. And so this fight, they basically kept the flyweight division alive after letting Demetrius Johnson go, simply because, instead of having Cejudo move up, simply because they thought it was a better marketing hook that Dillashaw could join the rare company of a two-weight champion, and you could see that happen on this show. It's like they didn't do that because TJ Dillashaw fought for this or was leading to this or wanted this. It's just like, oh, this could be a selling point that's unique. This could be a selling point that you don't see every day. So let's keep the division just so we can have a special story to tell for this show, and then the next one we'll start all over again with a blank piece of paper. So that aside, it should be a great fight. I like Dillashaw in the fight. I think the size is going to be a wake-up call for Cejudo, who is used to being having a little bit more ability to push opponents around than Dillashaw is going to countenance, and the angles are just tremendous. I mean, Cejudo looked awesome against Demetrius Johnson, but at the end of the day, he could bully him if he had to go to that place, and I don't think he can bully a Dillashaw, who's much sharper in terms of power punching. Demetrius certainly had power, but I mean, when it comes to the combinations and the way Dillashaw can pile them up, I mean, that's world-class stuff, and you can find yourself in the fear zone very quickly against him. The rest of the fight, the Van Zandt-Ostevich fight, you know, to my point earlier about Ariel, he's out there talking about Ostevich being a domestic violence victim and all this stuff that UFC would just never mention, you know? They just wouldn't mention it if Dana was on SportsCenter. You know, he'd take a question, but he wouldn't be framing that up as like, here are the things to talk about coming into this weekend. He would be talking about how TJ's chasing destiny and all the things they have the countdown voiceover guys say. Mm-hmm. So
what do you make of the Greg Hardy stuff? Have you been, I don't say interested in it, but what's been your take on kind of Greg Hardy's road to a co-main event here on the Plus debut?
Yeah,
it's happening.
It's happening. It's what it appears to be, you know? I mean, people, ESPN and people who watch real sports know Greg Hardy. And so when you have someone that people know and they can kind of fight, you put them into prominent positions when you want to draw eyeballs. And it really, as we're learning, doesn't matter why the person is known and how notorious he may be. I mean, look, Kimbo, you know, he wasn't an abuser as far as I know, but think about how he came to prominence. You know, think about why people wanted to watch Kimbo. It was, you know,
the Miami streets, boy.
Oh, of course. It was as Purian as anything could get. And sure enough, you know, you called on Kimbo when you needed to really do that extra level of eyeballs because he was known for a reason beyond just being competitive in a division in mixed martial arts. And, you know, unfortunately, that's who Greg Hardy is. He draws that extra attention. I'm sure they have metrics that when he fought on the Contender Show on Fight Pass, they did heightened numbers to be putting him in this position. They may even say, you know, he's a guy that actually has moved streams before. You know, he's a guy that's behind a digital service paywall will get people to look in that wouldn't otherwise. So few people have had the chance to even prove that. And he, you know, he's got serious power and serious potential as an MMA heavyweight. It's kind of gross that they are engaging with him and that they're hiring him. I don't expect anything different though. I mean, if someone cares about a guy who can fight, the UFC is going to sign him every single time. I mean, CM Punk just had his second go round. You know, just don't be mad and don't be mad when they don't care that you're mad. Like, you got to learn that. Like, there's going to be this because they're on ESPN and ESPN's all woke and shit. People think that they can like pressure advertisers and stuff, but you got to remember UFC is like still a bastard stepchild in the sports world. This isn't some like Fortune 500 deal where you can, you know, where there's like A-level brands coming to the table. I mean, Bud Light's even out of the game now. I mean, they got the Modelo on the canvas, you know. You're not talking about blue chip sponsors anymore that will pull out of anything so just to get heat off themselves because they don't want any brand damage. I think, you know, the people that are supporting this right now from an advertising and a sponsorship position just could give a shit. I mean, that's it. They're not going to be swayed by the public pressure campaigns that have been in vogue for so many years now. People tried, and here we go. Greg Hardy's going to go out there. Everyone's going to be dialed into everything, every single move he makes, and you got to expect that a fight promoter is going to want more of that than less.
So to wrap it up, the show we saw in Boston for the FS1 kickoff, I'm embarrassed because there was a rather big fight on the undercard that we...
Conor McGregor.
Yeah. So we saw Chael Sonnen beat Shogun Hua. Travis Brown beat Alistair Overeem. Uriah Faber's on that show, beat Yuri Alcantara. Yeah. Matt Brown defeated Mike Pyle. That was a 30-second fight. John Howard beat Uriah Hall in one of the most boring fights I've ever seen live. That was that was terrible. Michael Johnson defeated Joe Lauzon, much to the dismay of the faithful in Boston. And then this prelim card. I mean, this is so Michael McDonald defeated Brad Pickett. Conor McGregor defeated Max Holloway. Mm-hmm. That was on the prelims. He's second from the top in the prelims. Steven Seiler, Mike Brown, Diego Brandao, Danny Pineda. And on the Facebook/YouTube prelims, Manny Gamberian defeated Cole Miller. OSP beat up on Cody Donovan. And James Vick, future main eventer, defeated Ramsey the Stripper Nijem to open up the show. So, yeah, I had completely blanked that we saw McGregor versus Holloway on that show. And I remember coming out of that thinking, like, I was like, oh, maybe McGregor's not, like, he just didn't really impress me as much as I thought. And then we learned that he tore his knee and be gone. But seeing McGregor Hallway at that early stage, I was it's pretty crazy to look back on now.
Yeah, I wonder if there's someone lurking on this undercard that's going to steal attention like that. I mean, no one's going to be on Connor's level in that regard, but I think Alexander Hernandez has the ability to be talked about quite a bit, depending on how he does in the fight coming out of this show, and, you know, capture that energy around it, feeling like a new era and people having the chance to step forward and be perceived as new faces. I mean, we talked about it when we looked back at the UFC's history in Boston when we did that show, Josh. I mean, you know, Connor just captivated that weekend, even though he wasn't big enough that he was mobbed everywhere he went. He was able to, you know, come and go as he pleased. It's still like way more people were talking about an undercarder than they should. You know, like it was clear something was really going on. And that's one thing you got to give to the UFC. Like people get on their case about, and particularly Dana White's case about, you know, not directing the promotional attention and where fans feel like it might be deserved sometimes. But if someone's got the spark, Dana knows how to recognize it and push it to the moon. He's like Paul Heyman. You know, if it's there, he's going to find it. And if it's not there, yeah, maybe he could work harder to try to unearth it. But, you know, sometimes he doesn't have the time to devote to that, to bring out what it is about somebody that could get people to connect and emotionally invest in their fights. But if that spark's there naturally, if the X factor's there, he's going to find it. That's why he's where he is. And that's why the UFC is where it is, because it finds that spark early and nurtures it. And that's what we saw with Conor that weekend. It's like all of the pieces were already being laid. And what a great win for him looking back, you know, because now, like, there ain't anything Max can say, as he's become one of the great fighters in the world, you know, about Conor. It'd be a great fight if they ever do it. But Conor beat him, you know, and he beat him with one leg. I remember him icing his leg. I remember he had ice taped to his leg after that fight, Conor in the back. Nobody knows who John Kavanaugh is. I remember interviewing him. It's like, which one's John? You know, it's amazing.
Anything else been floating around in your head, MMA-wise, wrestling-wise, that you haven't had a chance to say to the microphone?
You know, one thing I did want to say about this UFC thing, because I looked this up coming into this thing, because I wanted to contextualize this for myself, because more so even than the Fox era, when UFC was basically brought in to help create Fox Sports 1 and supplant that network and give it enough content, like wall-to-wall. I looked at the TV guide for you know, the guide for Fox Sports 1, and now it's all Formula 1 and professional bull riding, soccer. It's so funny. Like, it was like wall-to-wall UFC, and now it's like there's no discernible identity for Fox Sports 1 all of a sudden. But so now they're playing shoulder-to-shoulder and competing for television real estate and coverage real estate with, you know, the biggest sports leagues in the world. I mean, Fox had a Major League Baseball – Fox Sports 1 had some Major League Baseball to contend with, but I mean, when it comes to big ESPN, I mean, ESPN spends $1.8 billion a year on the NFL, $1.3 billion a year on the NBA, $710 million on Major League Baseball, $534 million on BCS football, and $280 million on the UFC, ESPN Plus and ESPN combined. That's an estimate for the first year. Probably by, you know, year five, it'll push past 310, much like the UFC's deal started at 90 with Fox, 90 million, and ended up around 130 or so. And then the ACC's at 198, MLS, Major League Soccer, all the way down to just $44 million a year. So that'll give you an idea of kind of the hierarchy. UFC's higher up on that hierarchy than I would have thought off the top of my head, with just BCS, MLB, NBA, and NFL above them. But those are big people in the room. You know, when we talk about like, oh, ESPN's going to be all in, you know, like promoting this stuff. Like, dude, think about how much more they're paying these other sports.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the money is made. That's where the attention's going to be. That's where the energy is going to be directed. And so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how UFC stands up when it's not just like this thing like it was for Spike and Fox Sports 1 to build a network around, but it's something actually trying to compete with the other sports for eyeballs and for attention.
You can hear him on the Laps Fan. You can hear him on the Between Rounds, the former Sure Dog, as it were. And let's see, what else do we have to plug here, Jack? What do you want to point out?
That'll do. That'll do for now. Keep up the good work, Josh. Love the show, and love WrestlingObserver.com. Always great stuff. And if you want to keep up with us at the Lapsed Fan, I'm sure we'll have some some goodies coming your way as the year plays out. Wrestling Observer has always been a place that people embrace the show because, you know, I've done shows with Dave and stuff, so people kind of know what I'm about. It's kind of a different look if you if you listen to Labs Fan.
Yep.
We're all things to all people, and that means some people's favorite part of the show is other people's least favorite part of the show, but we'll keep going.
Awkward silence is the goal.
Yep. I'm happy with it. I feel like I've accomplished something if I can leave people squirming in their seats.
I forgot to ask you, any announcement yet on Double or Nothing? Are you guys going out to that?
There's talks. We'd love to be part of StarCast, and I think there is interest there. It's just there's a lot of logistics. We will be at WrestleMania and the New Japan show as well. So hopefully we can run into some folks there, shake some hands. That just came together a little while ago, the final plans there.
Oh, nice.
So maybe we'll do a meetup or something. But, yeah, I think there is interest in having us come out for StarCast as part of Double or Nothing. So it's going to be a busy year, it looks like.
Man. So if people at One Check, yeah, WrestleMania weekend, I'm sure they'd be posting and talking about where they can find you and track you down and stand alongside you in awkward silence.
When we did do a post show in the parking lot of AT&T Stadium in Texas after WrestleMania 32, and we hadn't really grown the audience for Lapsed Fan at that point like we have now, so I feel like it was less of a risk that, like, giving our location would be a potential security problem. But and I don't mean the amount of people. I mean just, like, you know.
People trying to beat you up.
Yeah, just trying to, like, make a scene, you know.
Your fans so, make a scene? Get out of here.
I don't know. It's not necessarily our fans, but people who see something's going on and try to get over, you know. You always have to think about that. But we do want to, you know, have some kind of get-together. So, yeah, the Lapsed Fans Twitter will be the place we'll announce anything. And our Patreon, we're, you know, all week at StarCast, we were posting exclusive bits, kind of like audio diaries as we went and our adventures looking at these carnies carrying on and pretending to be 20 when they're 50 and checking out of the hotel twice in an hour for no discernible reason and, you know, accusing Vince McMahon of many crimes without any warning. Very bizarre, very bizarre.
Wow.
To be amongst the circus there. So that's the viewpoint you'll get. So yeah, I'd encourage you to get involved with our Patreon as well, because not just because it puts money in our pockets, which is deserved, but because it's like, you know, a foreigner in a foreign land wandering the landscape. They know just, you know, we know just enough to be dangerous, but we don't know enough to actually, integrate with these people. So it's weird.
I just thought my dream for you, I think the apex of the Laughs Fan would be a live production of some kind.
Yeah.
At the parking lot of the Pontiac Silverdome. The former Pontiac Silverdome.
Yeah. Well, we got up in the guts of that place. I don't know if you saw what we did there, but we made the trek last year, right before WrestleMania, and we went to the Silver Dome, the guts of it, and we hopped the damn fence, we passed the Jersey barriers, we found a broken window, and we got in there, and we walked around, and we drank it in, and we felt the reality, and we did a podcast about it, just, you know, live sound, natural sound, walking around. The floor of the Silver Dome was completely flooded, because they had ripped off the roof by that point.
Yeah.
So it was rainwater and, you know, you had turf floating like lily pads on the floor. But you can bet we went to the center, looked out as Hogan and Andre would have at that massive scale, executed a terrible body slam in memory of 30 years to the day that Hogan did it to Andre. It was a surreal trip because not only did we do that like complete morons, but the city happened to be alive that week with discussion about new news that the Silver Dome demolition contractor had been selected and it's absolutely coming down and now it's gone.
Wow.
Now it's gone. Yep. Just as we left. So there's not much of a parking lot to do it in anymore, but your boys got in there and we felt that grandeur. We got a peek at it in 2007 when we went to WrestleMania 23, but we couldn't get in. There's a whole saga around that. We wanted to get in and look at it. That's back when it had its roof on and you really could feel the WrestleMania 3 feel. What we got in there was what we deserve as wrestling fans. We got a tattered, destroyed, wrecked version of our memories.
Through a broken window.
Yeah, we had to go in through a broken window. We were casing the joint. Every door was locked and boarded up. Sure enough, though, we looked down a little small hill, and there was a window that had been smashed open that you couldn't really see from ground level unless you walked down this hill and down the incline. And then you looked in the window, you realized it was an entrance point, probably for homeless people or something. I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking.
They had like tables and chairs stacked up near the window so you could, you know, kind of gingerly get down into the building. And what a rush. When we touched down and we realized that we didn't fly all the way out there for nothing and we could get into the building, it was so awesome. Oh, I'll never forget doing that. So that's in the archives from last March. We unveiled it the show when the day of WrestleMania. So,
nice. I don't know how I missed that, but now I have to go check that out. My God. My God.
You do need to check that out because that was like adventure podcasting. That's like, you know, that's the shit that makes it worth it, you know? Right.
Well, my drive in tomorrow is set then. Awesome stuff.
Okay. Enjoy it.
Jack and Canasio. Yeah. Hey, thanks. Thanks for coming back. And again, you're booked for the very last show, whatever that is in, 2038 or whatever.
I'll make the shot, brother.
All right. Big thanks to Jack. Big thanks to all you guys for hanging out and listening. Enjoy the fights this weekend. If you are streaming on let me tell you this. So ESPN Plus, if you have a smart TV and you have the ESPN Plus app, or you have the ESPN app rather, it probably has updated and has you have the ability to stream ESPN Plus through it now. I was a little, not going to say concerned, but I was a little annoyed because the ESPN app, I've been kind of waiting for ESPN Plus to be able to stream it on my Samsung TV. And I just happened to look today and lo and behold, there's the ability to sign in ESPN Plus. So I don't have to worry about, you know, streaming to a Roku or my Chromecast or something like that, trying to have a control for my phone. And so I'm very excited. So I'm ready to go. So again, if you, for some reason, don't update your apps or anything like that, just make sure you do, because your ESPN one probably is updated, so you can check out the show. And again, $5. I think most people listening to this are probably going to get that. So, check it out. Should be worth it. I'm looking forward to seeing the experience this weekend. And, very excited to see how this turns out, as we talked about all show. So I think my daughter might be waking up in the other room. It is almost midnight, so I'm going to go. Thanks to Jack and Canasio. Thanks to all you guys for listening. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. I appreciate you to spend any time with me or any of our great hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. So, for Josh Nason, that's me. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, I hope I didn't wake up my daughter. Insert catchphrase here.